President Trump faced swift condemnation Friday after using vulgar language to question why the U.S. accepts citizens from countries he views as undesirable for immigration. President, he denied the comments. We're talking about it on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The phrase that has caused the reaction is S-hole countries. Please note, we'll not be saying the full phrase at any point during this conversation. The president's comments have reverberated in Congress and around the globe. Kathleen Searles is an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. Her interests include news media and political psychology. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this conversation is about the climate of our communication right now. The president often establishes that tone. What tone is President Trump setting right now?
Well, it's definitely an interesting one for all of us following both the president and for the news coverage as well. To many, it's a negative tone. But what we see is that it falls predictably along partisan lines based on how you perceive it. So for many Democrats and also many of the news media who haven't seen anything like this, really, in terms of consistent use of vulgarities, they see it as negative and unprecedented. But for many of Trump's voters, for many Republicans, they see it as refreshing honesty. So quite predictably, depending on whether you like him, whether you voted for him, and your party allegiance, it depends a lot on how you see these comments and the context you put them in.
Kathleen, these series of comments came out at a private meeting among lawmakers when they were talking about immigration. This was perhaps supposed to be an off-the-record conversation, but certainly the words, the language he used during the meeting, it was leaked after the meeting. Should this have been behind closed doors, something that shouldn't have come out?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question because this has been something that has been a focus, at least of the administration, who much laments over what they see as a problem with leaking throughout the federal government. But in this situation in which we have senators and also congressmen meeting with White House officials, in which press were at one time invited in but were not at the time in the room, having a conversation about immigration legislation, it is not at all unusual that when the senators or our congressmen leave the room that they might be asked for comment by other reporters and that they might talk about what the president and they discussed. It's perhaps a little bit more unusual that they would share verbatim this quote, but given the kind of unusual nature of what the president said, I'm not surprised that this is something that came out.
And there were conflicting versions of the president's statement. The leaders do not agree with what President Trump said when he referred to African nations and Haiti. Senator David Perdue is a Republican from Georgia, and he says the president did not use the word S-hole. Republican U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said news reports were basically accurate. And then there was U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who also was quoting verbatim what he said the president said. So how should we take this when different lawmakers are saying different things?
Yeah, this is highly unusual. There's kind of almost seems to be a dispute here, the factual nature of the events. And we might kind of say, well, perhaps Senator Perdue didn't hear it, or I wasn't present, or vice versa. But certainly at this point, there has been enough senators on both sides of the aisle that have confirmed the comment. So at that point, we can only look to Perdue's interests, which have been consistently about reshaping the nature of immigration in this country. So we can only, perhaps think that maybe this is something that is he perceives to be a worse glossing over, given the larger interest, or we could give him the benefit of the doubt, but it certainly seems that given everybody that's come forward and confirmed it, that he is not in the right here.
Kathleen Searles is with us. She is an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University, where her interests include news media and political psychology. We're discussing President Trump's language he used on Thursday to describe people, including from Haiti, El Salvador, and African nations, using disparaging language. Your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the president's language? Should political leaders use those four-letter words in professional conversations? How does this change the way you view the White House, you view the president? What do you think about the words that the president used? 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kathleen, leaders from both political parties are responding to the questions about the controversy. Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, weighed in on Friday. Let's take a listen to his reaction.
So first thing that came to my mind was very unfortunate, unhelpful. But you know what I thought of right away? I thought about my own family.
So he went on to talk about his ancestors' journey to America and their challenges finding acceptance because of their Irish heritage. Is that the right kind of reaction from a politician?
So he's actually gotten a lot of backlash for these comments, particularly in regards to saying that they're inappropriate or unfortunate. But it depends, I suppose, on where you sit. For people that are fans of Paul Ryan, that strikes the right tone. It's measured. It's certainly not reactionary, but it is disapproving. But for people who think that this is a racist comment, they see his comments as not strong enough, as not heeding kind of the racial overtones of this comment. But this is also classic Speaker Ryan. Anytime we have the president say something that some people might perceive as outrageous or over the top, Paul Ryan pivots with, you know, that's unfortunate, but let me talk about my family, or let me talk about how this affects me, or let me talk about why this makes me think of my daughters. So we see him do this kind of thing a lot, and it shows a lot about regarding what, you know, the kind of awkward position he finds himself in which he needs to work with the president. He's in the same party of the president, but he also needs to speak to his audience and to the party writ large.
So he's getting backlash because it is too much of a pivot?
Well, that, and also perhaps not strong enough in its language. And unfortunate kind of makes it sound like, well, you know, it could have been better said. But many people would say that, you know, it shouldn't have been said at all. And in fact, that it hints at the president's way of thinking about immigration, particularly from primarily black nations, and what he thinks about people of color.
How should political leaders handle comments like this, where someone else, an ally, someone in their party, has come under fire?
It's really difficult, and it really strikes at this larger issue the Republican Party has currently, which is that Trump is a highly unusual Republican. And we have to remember that, you know, for a very long time, Trump was not a Republican. And even when he was running within the folds of the party, he considered himself very much a maverick, not a typical Republican. He even bragged about on the campaign trail that, you know, he was not the Republican you were used to. And we find ourselves now, the Republican Party and the president, kind of still trying to figure out how they work together, given this sort of unusual arrangement. Certainly, party leaders have in a really difficult position where they need to work with the president, they need to curry the favor of the president so they can get stuff done, but they also need to make sure that their voters back at home are happy with what they're saying and doing. So they are in a very difficult position, and truly, although we might like to see our leaders take a stand and be principled, at the end of the day, they have to respond to us, the voters, and that's a very fine line that many of them are walking.
They're also walking a fine line as they get closer to the 2018 midterms, where some of them are in very contested races. Is there political gain? Does it exist in waging arguments about what the president said in light of they perhaps may need him on the campaign trail?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. There's kind of two camps we see heading into 2018. And first, it bears noting that historically, the president's party loses seats in the midterm elections. So already history is telling us that probably the Republican Party is going to lose some seats just because of that context. But there are many members of Congress up for re-election that are in very red states that voted primarily for Trump, that voted for Mitt Romney before that, and McCain before that. And those members of Congress will need the president to campaign with them. And as we've seen, even in the 2016, but also now in his presidency, he's very good at stumping. He really gets people pumped up. And he can really help some of these members of Congress turn out the vote.
Kathleen Searles, I'm sorry, I have to jump in here. Kathleen Searles stays with us. She's an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. Your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Is this the language you want to hear? Does it reflect reality or is it offensive? Are the words the problem or do you take issue with the viewpoint they communicate? 800-642-1234. Back after this news. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, who was in the meeting with President Trump, said and heard the comments firsthand. He called the word choice hate-filled, vile, and racist. In the days following President Trump's meeting with lawmakers on immigration, we're getting a sense of what it means for a world leader to use offensive language. Kathleen Searles is with us. She's an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. She studies news media and political psychology. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. How should media outlets handle obscenities and when they come from high-ranking leaders? Maybe you think it's important to hear the words. Why do you wish networks didn't say or show those four-letter words, regardless of the context? 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Sven, who joins us from Appleton. Hi, Sven.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you just described the question that I had asked you. It would be nice to actually see some actual proof. You have two sides saying that, you know, one side says he said it, the other side says he didn't, and all of a sudden it's a media hailstorm, and it seems that it's always attack that he did say it, obviously from the Democratic side, it seems. That I guess that would be my point.
Sven, thank you so much. Kathleen, go ahead.
Sure. So I can certainly understand why this all sort of seems hard to parse, given the kind of varying accounts. But we do know that Republican Senator Jeff Flake has confirmed that he heard that. And reporting from the Washington Post late last night suggests that part of the reason Perdue is saying otherwise is because he believes that it was a slightly different term, but still a vulgar term, instead of whole house. That's still being reported on by other outlets and will come into light more into fruition in the days to come, I'm sure. But certainly it seems that something to this effect was said and that there was probably a vulgarity used. And certainly probably the decision most people need to make is whether that specific term was used or something else off-putting was used, whether or not they think that that's something problematic for the president to be saying.
This is unsurprisingly spilling into international relations. An African Union spokesperson said countries were alarmed by the remarks. Some said it was disgraceful or pushed back against the derogatory name-calling. The Haitian ambassador to the U.S., Paul Altidore, said this on Morning Edition.
Well, we were surprised, disappointed. Also, we want to condemn if those statements were made. Unfortunately, we feel once again Haiti finds itself in the midst of a very negative narrative here in the U.S.
Haiti finding itself in the midst of a negative narrative in the U.S. Kathleen, how does this language change international politics?
Well, it's been interesting to see how the news outlets have been covering it internationally. Certainly, Trump is not the darling of the international press. There's been lots of consternation over his presidency in Europe, and he hasn't particularly been seen a friendly press in Africa or South and Central American media outlets as well. But I think part of what we're seeing in terms of this sort of reporting on this is almost a, if you consider what the news outlets like to cover, they want to cover the events of the day, but they also want to cover something that is really exciting and conflictual and scandalous. And this certainly meets all those news values. Not only is it highly unusual and certainly news because it was uttered reportedly by the president, but it's also got the scandalous element, and news outlets really like to watch cover that sort of thing. That's more exciting for their viewers. So we almost see a kind of gleeful coverage from international press.
On Saturday, an emergency alert triggered across Hawaii. The warning of a ballistic missile attack was false, but it caused real panic. Reports are that it was human error. In what way is the reaction to this apparent accident different with President Trump in office?
It's a really interesting question because it's really hard for us to know what the counterfactual would be, of course. But it does seem to be that the people, at least that were on the ground in Hawaii at the time, reported that part of their concern was that this is a plausible event given the uncertainty surrounding the administration. Certainly, any time there's any such event or hint of an event, people are going to respond in a very anxious and fearful manner. But particularly given the kind of demographic makeup of Hawaii, which is most of which not a big fan of Trump, there seemed to be the sense that this was a possible occurrence because of the president's rhetoric surrounding North Korea.
I want to ask about the extent that the words the president reportedly said are a reflection of a popular perspective. Fox News host Jesse Waters defended the remark about Haiti and African countries. Let's listen to what he said about it.
This is how the forgotten men and women in America talk at the bar. This is how Trump relates to people. If you're at a bar and you're in Wisconsin and you're thinking they're bringing in a bunch of Haiti people or El Salvadorians or people from Niger, this is how some people talk. Is it graceful? No. Is it polite or delicate? Absolutely not. Is it a little offensive? Of course it is.
Is this a crude reflection of what Americans really think and what Americans really say?
This certainly seems to be the position that Trump advocates are taking. And in fact, there were reports that the people within the White House were not concerned about this comment, that they thought it would play well with their base, that it was part of this whole image of Trump as being, you know, an everyman who speaks his mind, who, isn't scripted, who is, speaks to the real people of the United States. And certainly that may be true for many among his base. But there is an interesting backlash among certain segments of the Republican circles who are concerned that this is degrading the presidency, that this sort of language and rhetoric is not deserving of the office. And who is right, we won't know until 2018. We'll certainly see, the writing in the tea leaves.
President Trump faced harsh criticism from both parties last week after the Washington Post reported that he had referred to Haiti and some African nations in vulgar language during a heated meeting with lawmakers on immigration. We're talking about the tone that is set in the White House and what impact those words could have on the conversation surrounding immigration. Kathleen Searle stays with us. She's an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. We're getting your thoughts, 800-642-1234. What do you think about the words that the president used? Are the words the problem, or do you take issue with the viewpoint they communicate? Does it make a difference? Is this language that you want to hear, does it reflect the reality of the way people talk, or is it offensive? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Gary now, who joins us from Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, good morning. If the president did say what he said, what supposedly he said, it's a breath of fresh air, and it's the reason why he'll get elected again. If you go to Mexico or any Central American country, Haiti, you would stay in certain protected areas. If you get outside those areas, you could be kidnapped, you could be murdered. Same way with Africa. Instead of criticizing the president, why shouldn't those countries be taking an inward look and say, hey, we have to clean up our act and we should be more responsible as a country?
Gary, thanks for the call. Kathleen, go ahead.
That's certainly one aspect of this larger discussion, but it bears noting that this is set in context to the immigration debate, in which the both parties and the president are debating how they're going to shape immigration moving forward. And specifically, this comment was reportedly made in reference to the protected countries such as El Salvador and Haiti, not in regards to whether or not these countries were safe places or are economically developed, but whether or not people that are already here from those nations that have already been allowed to come over because of certain events, in the case of Haiti, an earthquake, whether they should be allowed to stay. So when we look at it in that context, in regards to the president saying that those people are from terrible nations and we don't want any more of them, is being said in regards to the people that are already here that have been allowed to stay here because of extenuating circumstances in their country, then what we're really talking about is fundamentally reshaping how we allow people to flow into the United States, whom we allow to come over, and who is considered a protected immigrant class.
Let's go to John now, who joins us from Richland Center. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I am a Trump supporter, and I believe he made a mistake. His filter seems to be gone, and I have that problem too, and many people do. But I don't think the media should focus on all of his mistakes. Thank you.
John, thanks so much for the call. Kathleen, go ahead.
Yeah, that is it's an interesting point. Part of the reason we see such heavy media coverage of this, I would say, is twofold. The first is that anytime a world leader says something of that nature, we're going to see a lot of media coverage on it because it is unusual, it's extraordinary, it is unprecedented, certainly, the kind of language. So the media will cover unusual events, regardless of whether our president said it or, you know, a prime minister said it. But secondly, the media is also subject to what the public wants to hear. In the United States, the media is driven by profit. It's not funded primarily by the government. And so what they're going to report on is the kind of things that they think their audience wants to read and wants to hear. And it turns out that many people in the United States, and indeed the world over, like to hear, you know, kind of more exciting coverage. And certainly President Trump is nothing if not exciting.
Not to mention the language itself was a problem for media outlets as they grapple with whether to say S-hole countries. Professional standards were lots of meetings going on at WPR as well across newsrooms having meetings about how to approach the language, figuring out what they can say, what they should repeat, whether they shouldn't repeat the words uttered by the president. What goes into that consideration?
Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch unfold as somebody that studies the media, because certainly we don't get lots of examples like this from the United States president. But what I've seen is that there's definitely a distinct pattern based on whether or not the medium, whether it's print or TV, and even within TV, whether it's cable or broadcast, keep in mind that these are institutions that are governed by both different sets of rules, but also have different audiences. So we can see a clear example of this in CNN's coverage. They're a cable news broadcaster. They have a very specific sort of audience that is not necessarily, you know, gunning for more positive coverage of Trump. And what we saw there is that they embraced using the word. They initially censored the word on their lower part of their screen on the chyron. But eventually they went all out and didn't censor the word, used it quite a lot in their own reporting on it, and even, you know, put it in all caps. So, but then you contrast that with ABC and CBS, who are broadcast networks, who are governed by FCC rules in terms of the kind of language they can use, and they censored the word. The New York Times didn't use it in their headlines, but they did print it in their text, whereas the Washington Post has a rule that they always print verbatim anything the president says, and so they did print it verbatim both in their headlines, in their tweets, and also in the text. And really interesting patterns here.
NPR adjusted its use of the word reportedly as the story evolved. And here's Standards and Practices editor Mark Memmott explaining the reason NPR leaders thought they shouldn't include the word at first.
We could tell the important parts of the story, what the conversation meant to the negotiations over DACA, what it might have said about the president's view towards African nations versus Norway, and we could characterize the word without saying it.
He said NPR also needed its own reporting to confirm the story and that NPR will take the risk of using language that offends some people when it's integral to a story. NPR later did use the word in newscasts and reports. CNN used the word, as he said, on air and even put it in graphics. Other organizations blanked it out in broadcasting. Does it make a difference that the word is from the president?
Yes, there is many news outlets, including the Washington Post, who have certain policies about how they report on what the president says. And in the case of the Washington Post, they report always verbatim what the president says. Many other news outlets grappled with this a little bit more seriously, the usage of the word at least, because the president said it. And as you pointed out, NPR's evolution on how they were using the word was directly because of the nature of the comment, the unusual language, and because it kind of hinted at what it gave us a glimpse of how the president views immigration and also certain peoples that we might see come immigrate into the U.S. So certainly an unusual and unprecedented series of events, but one in which we can really see the news practices in the United States tested.
Let's go to Dave in Lancaster. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My point is people are missing the context of the comments that were made. They say that, you know, well, president's just speaking his mind. He's using words that may not be appropriate, but it's not a big deal. It is a big deal because what he's basically saying is racist remarks. It's not good for people who are predominantly from countries that are black or brown, but he's willing to take people from Norway, which is predominantly white. And people are missing that point. It's a racist remark that he made. It's not just the swearing.
Dave, thanks for the call. Kathleen, go ahead.
And that is in part why we see a lot of these media outlets have opted to cover the language and the quote in full, is because that word intonates how the sort of racial overtones of the president's thinking about this particular subject. And it bears repeating that while he seems to be referring to letting people in the context of the conversation, it was about people that are already here from Haiti and El Salvador, what we call people that have come here in terms of protected immigration. So despite what the kind of what the quote implied, it's really in reference to people that have already been living here, in some cases for 17 years, because of events in their home country.
I'm sorry, I have to pause there. We're unpacking how language informs our politics and what we can take away from this moment with Kathleen Searles. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. This whole conversation, it started Thursday when the Washington Post reported that in a meeting about immigration policy with several senators of both parties, President Trump interrupted a discussion that involved Africa as well as El Salvador and Haiti to say, quote, "Why are we having all these people from S-hole countries come here? We're talking about the fallout of the comments and how language influences politics with Kathleen Searles. She's with us. She's an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are the words the problem, or do you take issue with the viewpoint they communicate? What should be the next step? What do you think this where do you think this conversation should go? Do you see a solution? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sam now, who joins us from Eau Claire. Hi, Sam.
Hi. My thought is sort of a two-parter. We'll get the short one out of the way first. I feel that this conversation has sort of reignited old talks about African nations as a whole, and I think we ought to be careful with that kind of language because Africa is not a monolithic continent. There are many countries in there, and there are varying degrees of stability and instability. So that's worth noting. Many people, when talking, you know, in this context, may think of a place like Somalia as opposed to South Africa. So that's something we should be mindful of. And secondly, I'm not so troubled with the language that the president uses so much as I am troubled with the question he is asking, why. He's asking for specific license when talking about these underdeveloped countries in Africa or in Central America. And he doesn't seem to be asking for the same level of license from other places in the world, again, implicitly along the lines of race.
Sam, thank you so much for those observations. Kathleen, go ahead.
Yeah, your caller makes a very astute observation. Part of what gives this comment context is that he was referencing Haiti and other countries, and in contrast, expressing a desire to have more immigrants from Norway, which we all know is a predominantly Caucasian country. And it's also a country that has many of the sort of social services that Trump himself does not espouse. So that racial context really puts those overtones starkly at the forefront. And also in terms of the fact that this is part of a larger immigration debate, which is centered around, the need for a wall and changing how we bring people into the U.S. and the need for a kind of zero border. This is all part of a larger conversation the president has been having, both behind closed doors and to the public. And when you put in kind of a series of comments he said recently in terms of people from Haiti having AIDS and people from Nigeria need to go back to their huts. It seems presumably that the president is not a fan of these countries and certainly has a worldview that puts these countries in a very negative light, much like your caller pointed out, a monolithic light as well.
Yes, Sam, saying it's dangerous to paint African countries in these broad brushes, so to speak, broad strokes. What do you make of that? We can't group all of Africa together.
Certainly not. And this is something that, many people fall victim to because Africa is a very large and diverse continent. There are many different contexts in each of these countries, and oftentimes Americans aren't always as well versed on the histories of these countries. But these sort of comments put our need to have a better understanding of our neighbors around the world into focus. And particularly, there's been a lot of conversation in regards to the treatment of Haiti as being one of these undesirable countries. And certainly, one cannot paint Haiti with such a broad brush when we consider the U.S.'s involvement in Haiti's history and also the importance of the slave trade in Haiti's history.
Let's go to Andrew with us from Bosco Bell. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
I was listening to the comments, and what I was figuring is I think America does talk this way a lot of times. However, it doesn't look good at all. And I feel like maybe we should allow more people from these countries to come over here, because maybe that is how most of the world perceives these countries. You have to you have to think of it as maybe we should allow more people from, you know, Mexico, South America, Central America to come over here, and maybe we should keep part or most of the travel ban on all those Islamic countries.
Andrew, thanks so much. It seems to Kathleen that these comments the president made have perhaps opened up a larger conversation when we talk immigration.
Yes. So basically, since the 1960s, our policy has been the way we allow people to come into this country is either through a diversity lottery or through protected status. And that's, for example, how many Haitians got to this country and El Salvadorians as well. But it also bears noting that people don't often realize that the diversity lottery heavily pulls from African nations and Central and South America because of the nature of the kind of pool of people that are applying. But even if you are awarded a visa thanks to the diversity lottery, you still have to be very much vetted. You have to have a certain skill set. You cannot be a threat, of course. And you also have to prove that when you come to the United States, that you will not be a burden on social services. In fact, that you will bring a net tax income to the United States upon arriving here. And as a result, the people that immigrate here from Africa and Central and South America tend to be much more educated and have higher incomes than both other immigrants from European countries and in the United States as a whole. So when putting that in context, we can kind of see these comments in a different light, and presumably what we're having a conversation about here is really, do we want to reshape the way we allow people to immigrate into this country and how we allow that to happen.
Let's go to Lee now, who joins us from Williams Bay. Hi, Lee.
Oh, hi, Kate. I am taking issue with some of the individuals who have called into your program in apparent support of Trump's comments. I think we have to call it, I have to call it like I see it. I find the language used by Trump ignorant. I don't want to be redundant, but uninformed. And most definitely racist. Thank you, Kate. Goodbye.
Bye, Lee. Kathleen, what kind of tone do you expect from President Trump as we look at the next several years of his presidency?
I think we can only expect more of the same. In the last couple of weeks, he's had a couple of these comments that have been considered racially charged at best. There's been a couple instances of vulgarity starting in 2016 on the campaign trail, which is actually worth noting that, you know, there were vulgar quotes that came out about Trump when he was running, and the American people decided that that was something that they were ready to live with. Since then, he's, you know, referred to football players as sons of bees. I can only expect that we'll hear more of this. Whether it's because he thinks it plays well to his base or that's just the way he speaks and he's not going to filter it for the American public, either way, I expect we'll see more.
Did other presidents speak in this type of language? Is there a history here?
It's interesting. Actually, the first confirmed use of the S word in print was at the New York Times in 1974 when President Richard Nixon said it. This is certainly the first use of this particular word, and particularly for the New York Times. But we've also, if you remember, Cheney in 2004 reportedly said, you know, something not quite so nice. George W. Bush has used the S word. There was also Joe Biden's hot mic issue after the Affordable Care Act passed. So we see these sort of one-offs with, former presidents and vice presidents. But certainly the current president, the current administration has been dealing with these sort of wildfires in terms of how the president speaks, his language, his tone, one after the other since he's been in office for the last year.
Do you think the tone of this administration, is it resetting the expectations we'll have for future presidents?
That's interesting, and that's a question that political scientists are really asking themselves, because much of the way the presidents have spoken in the past isn't governed by any rules or regulations. It's just a set of norms that, you know, the American people have asked presidents to abide by, and the presidents themselves have abided by because of the, you know, kind of faith they put in the office. Whether or not this is something we see continue after Trump's presidency is one to really watch. We might see a backlash where, you know, the next president is kind of goes the other way, where they're very much, there's a decorum and proper language, or we might see that the American public really speaks to them and they want more of the same.
We had Harry, who called in, couldn't stay with us. He wants to know, what do you think the response would have been if this was President Obama speaking like this?
I think it would be very much the same. If any time a world leader uses this sort of language, has this sort of very negative, racially charged comment, there's going to be a lot of media coverage of it. And there's going to be a debate in the public over whether or not that's something that's okay, that is acceptable from a world leader. I mean, you have to remember, there was a big debate over whether or not Obama should wear a tan suit. Certainly we would expect if Obama said something like this, that we would have debated whether or not that's okay as well.
Kathleen, before we let you go, you study political communication. What will you be watching for in the weeks to come here?
I'm going to be watching to see how Republican leaders handle this situation, whether or not they come forthright and denounce it, or if they kind of scurry around it to you know, aim for their legislative goals. I'll also be watching how the media outlets continue to cover it and whether or not this represents a tipping point in terms of covering the president very honestly without kind of any filter.
Kathleen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Kathleen Searles is an assistant professor of political communication at Louisiana State University. Her interests include news media and political psychology. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Niaja Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Brittany Williams provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the Ideas Network.